And good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. It is a Tuesday, October the 4th, 2016. 12:14 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You're tuned into the Now program. I am Scott Spears. Today, our guests are Sean Kraft, commentating on all that's going on in the world. And we should be joined momentarily by State Representative Dorothy Polenda. So when she arrives, we will get her on the air and talk to her about what a state representative exactly does and what is going on in regard to Marion, Ohio. And I believe we might have a special guest later on in the program, a voice, a well-known voice here at WWGH Radio that hopefully we'll hear in the next hour. We haven't heard for a while.
Yep, that's right.
The opinions are always good.
That's right.
Yellow Dog. The Yellow Dog station Yellow that Dog. We are.
You know, I don't think I'm really a guest. I think I'm a co-host.
I feel like we haven't quite promoted you to co-host.
Yeah, right.
You have to pass the paperwork.
Oh, yes.
And you're
going
to have to go to the Human Resources Department and really go through all that before the co-host.
Hold on. Let me call Terry.
Yeah, you have to go see the Human Resources lady and get your hand stamped and all that sort of thing. Well, yesterday you left about 15 minutes early, but we did have a call again in regard to Donald Trump. And this is what we're talking about because the vice presidential debate is tonight. Mike Pence will meet Tim Kaine tonight at 9 p.m. CNN will cover it. I'm sure all the other networks will cover it as well. But what do you make? These two vice presidents aren't very well known. It hasn't. So what do you expect tonight? Pence will have to defend Trump, I think.
It's going to be boring. My opinion is it's going to be completely boring. Matter of fact, I'm not even giving in our DVR.
Well, that'll be good. When we talk about it tomorrow, you won't know what we're talking about.
Right? Or afternoon. No, I don't know. I just think it's going to be, I don't know.
I think it'll be professional because I think they're both politicians. They've both been in debates before. They've both been governors. Tim Kaine of Virginia, Mike Pence of Indiana. So I think there's an interest there. And by the way, if you do want to weigh in on anything, 740-383-9944, because we unpacked a whole lot of stuff yesterday on this show about the weekend that was Donald Trump. Now, something that did happen last night, and I don't want to give a whole lot of credence to this because I'm not even sure how I feel about this story, to be honest. But Julian Assange, the WikiLeaks guy, goes on the air at 4 o'clock this morning and says between now and November the 8th, he's going to leak a bunch of emails of Hillary Clinton's, and he says this will take her down.
Again, more emails?
Well, this is different, though, because this is not something that the government's doing. This is WikiLeaks. This is Julian Assange, who has gotten information from the government before illegally, but he says he's going to release these documents that will take her down because he has a personal vendetta, so he says, against Hillary Clinton. So what do you make of this cyber warfare in the last 30 something days of this election?
I knew it was coming. People, it always happens. It's going to be, it's going to get even worse than it is right now. It's going to get down to really back and forth, really, really bad, I think.
Well, could this take her down because so much of her anger is based in emails, anger toward her?
Personally, I don't think so because, the FBI has already cleared her on the... if the FBI did not find these, are these documents even true or...
Well, that's what we'll have to find out, but what if they are the 33,000 emails that they say that she deleted? Because this guy's a... He's big in cyber espionage.
Well, I don't know. Why would it affect me? I guess that's what I'm trying to figure out. Why these emails will affect me? It doesn't affect me.
Well, the story is that Hillary Clinton knew the documents were classified, and if they got in the wrong hands, which maybe they did, that foreign intelligence would have our classified documents. That's the story behind the emails.
So. This guy works for the foreign?
He's a rogue guy all his own. But he has been able to uncover documents from the Democratic National Party. He's also, I believe, gotten some things from the government, which is where this all started about 7 years ago. So he's big into hacking. Basically, he's a hacker, Julian Assange.
Well, shouldn't he be in prison for hacking?
Well, that's why he's not here. He doesn't live in America. He kind of like an Edward Snowden. But the question is if he sheds light on something like this, is he wrong?
Yeah, because he's wrong for hacking. I mean, how do we know that he didn't steal that from the? It doesn't say what server it came from. That could have come from anybody's server.
But we won't know. We won't know. But the information he's published before has been correct. I mean, like the Democratic National Committee information that he stole, he's the one who leaked the information of them talking bad about Bernie Sanders, which led to the resignation and removal of Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
I don't know. It's I knew it was going to get down to this. You know, people were just going to start taking digs.
Well, they might get down to it, but what does this say about where we are in this election? Could this elect Donald Trump? And if it does, is it a good thing?
No, I don't think it's a good thing. I think it's a bad thing because I think he's off his rocker right now. Now, see, these emails, I don't understand. I understand if it got, you mean, they're trying to say these emails went across the international border.
Yes, they say they could have been hacked by cyber hackers.
They could have, but they haven't.
We don't know, because they're not going to tell us if they got them. But because she was using a private server, they were more susceptible than if she'd been using a government server, is, I guess, the reasoning.
I don't know, but as far as I know, she's not the only person that used the private server before, right? Before all this happened.
People have used private servers, but she's the only one running for president right now. It's not going to have a big impact on them as it might on Hillary Clinton.
I don't know. It'd be interesting.
Is that a scary thought for you? That people, this whole cyber hacking thing is going to be very important in the weeks and months to come, because this is the new terrorism.
Oh yeah, cyber. Yeah, definitely. It's getting scary. Definitely. We definitely get to the bottom of the cyber hacking.
And maybe more importantly, does Russia play a part in this?
I hope not.
Well, because all of this, anytime there's any kind of cyber hacking, it seems like it all seems to stem from Russia.
So where's this guy live at, by the way?
He travels all around. He was in London. He's been in Belgium. He just kind of tries to stay on the move.
Why don't we stop him?
Well, we couldn't stop Edward Snowden. How are we going to stop him? It's a world now where you can release anything anywhere.
Yeah, well, that's technology for you. Everything's so easy to hack into. There's always different kind of codes.
How would you deal with him, I guess, is an important question. If he was doing these things in regard to something that you held.
Well, I have no clue, because apparently we can't arrest anybody over international waters, so... I have no clue. I mean, obviously, Edmund Snowden, yeah, he did what he did, and he got he lives in Russia now. So there's nothing you can do about it. I just hopefully, you know, whatever information he does have is correct. Doesn't want to, you know, cause an uproar in the United States over something stupid and silly just because you don't like a woman that is running for president.
Well, that's the other part of this, that he's said, he's made no bones about it, that this is a personal vendetta for him. He does not like Hillary Clinton. But
he likes the unknown.
Well, like a lot of other people. We hear him every day.
Yeah.
What did you make? We got a lot of calls yesterday. Kathy, Gail called in. We had two callers who I don't know who they were. They were just unsubstantiated callers. We had a new lady call in yesterday several times, which we appreciated. What did you make of the tenor of those calls yesterday and your thoughts on the show as a whole yesterday in regard to those calls?
Well, it was they all had a pretty interesting point. Gail, you know, said it was a Trojan horse. He thinks it's... you know, Donald Trump is doing this to elect Hillary.
And we'll take your phone calls, by the way, because Dorothy Palinda is not here yet. She might be here about 12:30, so that could still happen. But 740-383-9944, weigh in right now, 740-383-9944. But here's the Trojan horse thing that I guess I did not understand fully. If you believe that Donald Trump is a Trojan horse, and by Trojan horse you mean he's there just to elect Hillary Clinton, If you believe that, then why are you more comfortable with him being president than Hillary Clinton? Because basically he's just a scam, is what you're saying. If you call him a Trojan horse, I don't believe he is that. Because I don't think that anybody could be that powerful to knock off 16 Republicans, fool people like Chris Christie and Rudy Giuliani and Rance Priebus and all the Republicans. I don't think you could fool all of them like that. I think eventually, and I don't think you'd want to call her Crooked Hillary. I don't think you'd want to make fun of her health. I don't think you'd want to make fun of her transgressions, her husband's transgressions, I should say. Well, that's another thing. Now, let's get it. But by the way, you can explain that right now. 740-383-9944. But here's something else. Now, the other night, Donald Trump, in that rally, and I guess I didn't take it this way the other night, but apparently this is how I meant it. Which kind of shocked me. Saturday night in a rally in Pennsylvania, he said, speaking about Hillary Clinton, he said, let's see, I want to get this right because the quote is very interesting. He said, Hillary Clinton was not loyal to her husband, former President Bill Clinton. He said, I don't think she's loyal to Bill. You want to know the truth? And really, folks, really, why would she be? Now, I guess now that I read that, it does make sense. But if you're saying she's not loyal to Bill, because if you're talking about Bill being loyal, you're talking about his affairs. He's insinuating that Hillary Clinton had affairs. Because what he said was, he said, I don't even think she's loyal to Bill. You want to know the truth? And really, folks, really, why would she be? Do you think, what was the insinuation?
I'm not sure what, maybe she was lying to him over the years. I don't know. In my situation, it probably is, he thought she was cheating.
Yeah, it's very, very interesting, to be honest with you. It's an interesting time, certainly one of the most interesting elections that we will ever have, I think, in our lifetime. And maybe that's the way the cookie goes. So, but don't forget, the vice presidential debate between Mike Pence and Tim Kaine will be tonight, starting at 9 p.m., covered by most of the networks. I know it'll be on CNN, and that should be a lot of fun. So don't miss that. It's going to be a tremendous amount of fun, these debates. It only happens every 4 years on the national level, so it's quite enjoyable. And also, don't forget that the that the Morrow County Historical Society is having their second annual Celebrity Chef Omelette Breakfast coming up on Saturday, September the 8th. Breakfast from 8 to 11 a.m. Auction at 11:15. Seniors, it's at the Seniors on Center. So if you have any more, want any more information on this, 419-560-8100. And the rest of this hour is going to be devoted to something very interesting, a guest we have not had on the show, which is hard to believe, State Representative Dorothy Polenda. Dorothy, how are you?
I'm great. Great to be here. What a beautiful fall day here
Isn't
in
it?
Marion, Ohio. It is.
It is. Now, Dorothy, I wanted to start very basic because I want people to know what a state representative does, for people who don't know. What does a state representative do?
The Ohio Constitution currently assigns or divides the state into 99 House districts. Each district contains approximately 120,000 constituents. These are voters and non-voters, but 120,000 constituents. Every 10 years, according to the Ohio Constitution, by virtue of the latest statistics, vital statistics, those lines are reconsidered and perhaps redrawn. So in 2011, when I was appointed to fill a vacancy created by Senator Burke when he filled a vacancy in the Senate, I represented the 83rd District, which included all of Logan County, all of Union County, and a very small slice, or a smile as I called it, of Marion County. That very next year, pursuant to the Ohio Constitution and pursuant to the latest census, the lines were redrawn, and I was assigned, by virtue of my re-election, to represent the 86th District, which then included, and now it still includes, all of Union and most of Marion, except what I call the top six townships, Clarendon, Tully, Salt, and two others. And those are represented by our newly elected or soon to be elected Wes Goodman, who replaces Jeff McLean here in January.
Did you always have an interest to want to go into politics?
Not per se, but as a small child, both of my parents were very involved in the community. I remember being barely able to walk and having my mother get us in the car, all of us children, and get out paper bags and clean the side of the roads. We were very involved in our church and other civic organizations. And I observed and was involved in being really a member of the community. My parents taught us to believe that your community is only as good as you make it. We cleaned the township hall uninvited. It was just our civic duty to do that. As a lawyer for 30 years, practicing since 1981 in Marysville and Marion, I was also involved in the community in many other ways. And so when this appointment became available, I saw it as an opportunity to serve my community in the state of Ohio in a greater capacity. And I was so pleased when I was chosen among five applicants to fill the vacant position, which then very soon thereafter I ran to complete Dave Burke's unfinished term.
You know, I think it's interesting. I run into people and they have a problem. And they're not sure, should they call their congressman, should they call the governor's office, should they call their state senator, is it something the mayor takes care of, is it their state representative? What kind of questions would be directed at you? When should they call your office?
They should call me any time and every time, because if my office is not the right office to answer that question, we will do everything in our power to find the answer for that individual or to direct that individual to the right person. A lot of times we get questions that are of a federal law nature, questions about Medicaid, Social Security, and other things. And we are most happy to help provide them with the name, the address, and the contact number of their congressman. But to get back to your original question, what does a state representative do? A state representative then is assigned to a particular district in Ohio, one of 99. I am assigned to the 86th district. My job is to know the history, the geography, and the people of my district as best as I can so that when I go to the state house, I understand what their concerns are, what their particular opinions are about a certain issue, and I can advocate on behalf of my constituents those concerns. Now, clearly, Scott, you're going to have issues where I have constituents on both sides of the issue. I do not legislate by polling. I legislate based upon the conservative principles upon which I was elected and continue to be elected. But I do legislate based upon what my constituents tell me are the most critical issues facing Ohio and facing our district.
In Marion right now, what are they telling you?
The number one issue in Marion and statewide is the opiate and heroin crisis, clearly.
Here's an interesting thing. Last week, I believe it was, I get my week screwed up. It was either the last week or 2 weeks ago. We had Sam Quinones on, the author who wrote the book Dreamland. And he had come through Marion. He gave a speech here in Marion, and that was more directed toward the opiate epidemic. But when you say it is statewide, it's not just in Marion, kind of make people understand that, because when we live in our microcosm of Marion, it seems that we think it's not happening everywhere else.
Well, going to the state house, being in caucus, and being on the floor where you listen to 99 state representatives talk about this crisis in their district makes you understand that it really is hitting every part of Ohio. Southeastern Ohio has a terrible problem with it. Every day in the Columbus Dispatch, we read about the latest overdose death, and it is certainly not exclusive to Marion. I was really proud of our Marion law enforcement and the front page article that appeared two Sundays ago in the Columbus Dispatch about how Officer Collins, Chief Collins and his officers have recognized that arresting those who overdose is the wrong approach. That we must understand that it's an addiction, that arresting those who overdose is not solving the problem in any manner whatever. Rather, from where I sit and from what we're trying to do legislatively, it appears to me that we need to take a comprehensive approach to solving the problem, that law enforcement, legislators, and local communities must come with a common understanding of the nature of the problem and what the most effective solutions are. And clearly, all of us agree that it's about education, not only educating families about the dangers of drugs, but educating ourselves. And as I said, case in point is the turnaround that law enforcement has undergone in terms of recognizing that we just simply can't arrest our way out of this problem.
You know, that article appeared about a year after another article appeared that Chief Collins had been interviewed for. Didn't write it, but he was interviewed for in the Dispatch, and we did several programs on that. We had the chief come in. We had Judge Slagle come in. Judge Finnegan came in. And at that time, there was all this discussion of a judge, and I can't remember what county was in, Judge Luthold, that he was not... The term at the time, he was not as easy. He was sending people to jail quicker than we were doing it in Marion. In Marion, we were sending people to rehab. In his county, he was sending people to jail. And that maybe that would work here. But maybe that's not the way to go. Is that...
Well, you've absolutely hit the nail on the head in terms of the difficulty in dealing with the situation, because we are a county divided, we are a state divided in whether or not punishment versus rehabilitation is the answer to the problem. You know, we've got the law now provides naloxone to be available to our local governments, but Scott, the problem is it's at the cost of the local governments. It's not being provided to them free of charge. We've also seen firsthand in this community that naloxone, which is the life-saving drug to a heroin overdose, is administered not once but multiple times to the same individual. We have counties, and I won't identify them, but we have counties that are choosing not to even provide naloxone. One, not only is there a cost issue, but there's a complete frustration that you bring an individual back to life only to have to bring them back to life repeatedly with this drug. And I'm talking about repeatedly in a given 24-hour period. So, you know, naloxone is not in and of itself the silver bullet. It's about education. It's about, as I said before, coming to a consistent and understanding and approach to it, which clearly we do not have in our own community, Scott, as evidenced by the elections coming up. I think three of our races are all about the frustration Marion residents feel about whether or not our law enforcement is properly addressing the heroin and opioid addiction.
That's interesting that you brought that up, because of course we follow the local elections here in Marion, and a lot of the elections are based all around that issue. Is that a good thing to have it based around that, or bad? Is it something, because I don't believe any candidate wants to see the problem get worse.
Absolutely not. And again, I think it's about, in part, a lack of understanding of the limited resources within which our law enforcement and elected officials have to deal with the problem. Number two, that it's an ongoing learning process. A new drug seems to appear on the scene faster than we can even come to terms with how to understand and deal with the last drug. We've talked about blue heroin and some of the other things that have hit our streets. I would encourage those who are quick to condemn the process to take the time to understand the complexities of, one, the legal system, which is in turn a product of the legislation that we have created and the limitations that are created within the laws that bind our law enforcement, our prosecutors, and our judges to certain mandatory outcomes, Scott, that once again bind those officials who are trying to address the problem. One of the things that we're clearly looking at as a legislature is to give judges more discretion in dealing with these drug and heroin and opioid overdose and related crimes. I talked with Director Gary Moore. Now, he is the director of the Department of Rehabilitation and Corrections last Friday. He has said for the past 2 years, I will not build another prison simply to house all of those individuals who are convicted of minor drug offenses. And so in that regard, he has created a new program wherein if a court agrees not to sentence a fifth-degree felony drug possession to prison, he will give that court the per diem cost of incarcerating that individual for that short period of time for two reasons. One, studies show that individuals who go into a prison system for these short-term sentences for a felony five are going in addicted and coming out addicted because these prisons are not rehabilitation centers. Director Moore's hope is that if more courts will agree to do this, then he's willing to provide dollars of his own budget to local communities to provide the community services needed to rehabilitate these individuals back into community and back into a productive and safe life.
If somebody says, I know how to fix this, I have the answers, is that believable?
No, because there is simply not one solution that applies across the state and to each and every individual. This is why the ongoing discussion about this problem is so critical. And is it realistic to think that we're ever going to come to a consensus, Scott, about whether or not someone who is found to be in possession of heroin or illegal drugs, guilty of a crime for which they should be incarcerated, or whether or not that person should be treated as a person who is a victim of a disease and that requires and deserves rehabilitation. Right now, this community and this state is divided over that issue.
Other things going on. We just had a firm come in and come up with an idea about Marion Made. Promoting manufacturing in Marion to help it get moving in a forward direction. Is that a problem in Marion beyond all the time we spend on the drug issue? And what is the answer to fixing the job problems?
Well, I believe that Marion has been in the forefront and has been a real leader in Ohio in terms of understanding that there needs to be a better connection between what our students in high school and our technical schools are studying in relation to the jobs that are actually out there. I think Chuck Spielman is just a rock star in terms of getting that connection, being an advocate for that connection, and traveling not only the state but the nation talking about this need to provide students with meaningful education. His work has caused many, many technical schools around the state of Ohio to really take a second look at the programs they're offering relative to what jobs are really out there. In doing so, you know, companies like Honda, who realize that their engineers, for example, are retiring at a rate three times as fast as those students who are graduating with an engineering degree, represents a real crisis for the Honda manufacturing company, are eagerly working with technical schools and individuals like Chuck Spielman to provide the actual machines that these students will work on at Honda, and to provide them with internships so that when these students graduate from high school or technical school, they are ready to go to work at Honda in a meaningful employment that's meaningful to both the employee and to Honda.
Yeah, the work Chuck Spielman has done is great, without question. One of the big debates that constantly goes on here in Marion, it seems, is with just simple morale. Are people happy here? Are people happy with their city and county? And one of the big debates that is continuous, and it's kind of interesting, for about the last 15 years is downtown Marion. There is a revitalization project. I can't say the exact number of years it's been going on, but at least 10 years where they've had a downtown Marion manager and trying to bring businesses back there. Is that feasible with the way Route 95 is set up now? Is that the way to go?
I think Marion, the city of Marion, is just an ideal location for the reasons that you just stated. Not only do we have a nexus to 95, but Route 23, Route 4. I can think of fewer cities in my immediate geographic area that have more potential than Marion in terms of that growth. Marion is not unique in terms of the difficulty and the vitality of its downtown area. I mean, this is as we change the nature of our industry, it's a natural progression to have a change out of the downtown area into bigger areas outside the downtown area. So I don't see that as unique to Marion. What I do see is that there are individuals in Marion who are absolutely committed to this. To number one, living and staying here and keeping their business here, and two, committing their time and their resources and their energy to finding real solutions that are sustainable for a downtown that is a place for our community to not only shop, but a place for them to enjoy being as a family.
When it comes back to that morale issue, which I think is interesting because we've talked about Chuck Spielman, I also point to the work that's being done with dorms here in Marion in the
right.
last few
Lois
years.
Lois Fisher in the downtown dorms.
In the downtown dorms. But the ones on 95, which I don't think Lois has a stake in, but they're filling up with the ones across from the college. I'm not sure who owns those, but they're filling up at a rate. As soon as they build them, they're full.
And that's such an interesting dynamic and one that needs to be studied. What is it about the student today that is filling a need for? And I just see that as something that's going to increase. Living on campus or close to campus, you know, provides a connection to that student that goes beyond the classroom and provides valuable lessons about community, about how to live together with an individual or a group of individuals. And it's something that is an integral part of an education, Scott, that I think we lose when we are just a commuter school.
All those good things going on, and there are. And I can say I've lived in Marion for a long time, and I don't run into the bad part. Now, not to say there's not, because I'm sure things are going on. But why is the morale low? Is it low everywhere?
I think to some extent it is, and it's low because for several reasons, but one, we see a shift. We see a shift from the way Marion used to be to inevitably what it must be to serve the needs of our citizens, and change is always controversial, Scott. You know, one of the other issues that we as legislators are grappling with is the infant mortality rate, which affects Marion as well. Did you know that Ohio is 47th in the nation for infant mortality? That's a terrible statistic, one that not only should we be ashamed of, but that we are compelled to do something about. When we resume session in November, we will be working on a bill that has passed the Senate that will attempt to address this issue, Scott. And one of it is that it will mandate in-hospital training and education for all new mothers of babies, but will also identify those mothers and those families who are at risk and will mandate beyond the hospital setting in-home counseling and care for the first year of that baby's life. We've got to do something to change that statistic.
Ohio, of course, in any election year becomes very important to people, certainly a presidential year. This may be more so than others because our governor ran for president. And then we had a convention here, so it was interesting to that degree. And right now, the Republican candidate, Donald Trump, the last poll I saw, he leads Ohio. Do you think there's a division on the national level or the state level in Ohio when it comes to this presidential election, which people are so wound up in?
Well, first of all, it's humorous to hear we've never seen an election like this. Scott, I hear that about every presidential election. Every presidential election, you have people shaking their heads saying, this is the most important election of our lives. This is the most unusual election of our lives. This is the most critical election of our lives. You know, it's an election. It's an election, and the number one thing that I would hope is that people inform themselves about the candidates and people vote. What discourages me about the elections is that as animated as people seem to be and have opinions, that we have such a low turnout when it comes to voting, Scott. Voting couldn't be easier in Ohio. Applications for absentee ballot are mailed to virtually everyone who is registered to vote in Ohio. You can vote from the comfort of your home. In addition, we have 29 days of voting that you can go to the polling location where you are assigned and vote 29 days ahead of November 8th. Ohio's voting is the most generous of any state in the nation. Did you know that? And yet, the percentage of people that vote in Ohio is appalling. So I would hope that people...
Why is it that way?
I have no idea. It's certainly not because we don't have access to voting. I think, Scott, part of it is that people don't believe that their vote is being counted properly. There's a lot of argument about that. Or that their vote doesn't matter. And I will tell you that statewide we can count to numerous races, even this year in primaries, that have been won with 1 to 2 votes. So your vote does matter. I would also challenge those who scream about disenfranchisement and fraud. I would argue that those are hollow arguments without a lot of fact behind them. I don't understand why someone makes those arguments because, to me, the people that are arguing that are hoping people will come out to vote. If I became convinced that my vote wasn't being counted properly or my vote didn't matter, that would not encourage me to vote.
It's interesting to me because certainly you're right. Every election cycle, we've never seen an election like this. But there are just certain systemic things that are different. I don't think since Dwight Eisenhower has there been a candidate that has never held political office. I don't think that a woman has ever been on the top of one of the two major tickets in a presidential election. I don't think that the verbiage in this election has been used in recent years. So for those reasons alone, I think it's different.
Well, I would disagree with you respectfully. 4 years ago, it was the first time a black person had ever been on the ticket. So you'll always find something that you can clamor. We've never seen anything like this. I think that the uniqueness of each presidential year challenges the voters to be educated, to take some initiative into looking at the background of each of the elected candidates for each office and to exercise their right to vote and to look at that as a privilege rather than something that they should ignore.
Absolutely. But I guess who would you equate Donald Trump to in past history?
I have no idea.
That's why I think it's a unique election.
Well, who would you equate Barack Obama to in past elections?
Well, I would say it's unique from that perspective of his race, but I don't think from his verbiage. I think presidential verbiage has been what
I would disagree. I think the verbiage is this way every year, every 4 years.
Women
we just have
call
amnesia.
Pigs and dogs and No. All that? That's happened before?
I think so. Yes,
really?
I do.
Who would you cite?
I'm not going to go there. I'm just not going to get into this kind of an argument.
Well, no, do you support him?
I do support Donald Trump.
For what reason?
I believe that if I have several reasons for supporting Donald Trump, at least I have several reasons for supporting Donald Trump. I have no reasons for supporting Hillary Clinton.
Right. Well, I'm just interested what the reasons are, because we open up the phone. It's interesting because we open up the phone lines almost every day.
Uh-huh.
And people do support Donald Trump and people support Hillary Clinton. But when people say they support Donald Trump, their answer always is, we don't want Hillary. What are the good, solid plans things you like about Donald Trump?
Donald Trump resonates with people because Donald is not a politician. And if you look statewide at the individuals that won primaries, Scott, the public is done with career politicians because career politicians have done nothing for them in Washington. This is why Donald Trump rang so true with so many people. They're tired of the empty promises of people who have no term limits, have done or not done for them. Donald says things that career politicians are afraid to say. He resonates with people because he's human. And even in his most acrimonious state, people look at that as human as opposed to polished, slick, and compromising.
That being said, and this is just the final question on this, we have a very popular Republican governor. And our very popular Republican governor did not attend the convention for the reason that Donald Trump was the candidate, which is what he said. And he also, in the last interview I saw, he said he certainly is not going to vote for Hillary Clinton, but it's highly unlikely that he will vote for Donald Trump. Why do you think he doesn't see it that way?
I will not comment on Governor Kasich's or anybody's right to choose who to vote for or who to not vote for. For me to suggest why I know why someone would vote for or not vote for a candidate is completely inappropriate.
Do you think it was good for him not to attend the convention?
He did what he had to do.
Did what he had to do. Were you in support of it?
I attended the Republican National Convention. The governor did what he had to do. I am in no position to cast aspersions on or even an opinion on whether someone chooses to attend or not attend an event. That's his choice, just as it is your choice to vote for Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump, just as it is anybody else's choice to vote for an individual candidate. It's not appropriate for me to question someone's motivations or someone's decision in that regard.
So for just to be fair, what are the negatives, in your opinion, in regard to Hillary Clinton?
I think that Hillary Clinton has caused enough people to believe inherently that she's not an honest person, and that as a lawyer, I look at some of her conduct as criminally based, and that she should be in prison for some of the things that she's done with regard to her emails and some of the other conduct while Secretary of State.
Why do you think the FBI did not feel the same way?
Not appropriate for me to second-guess the FBI.
It's okay to be not appropriate and second-guess the FBI, but when you say you feel
that's my answer, Scott.
Right, but
move on.
But what? No, because the question is when you say that she should be in jail, when you say that she has committed crimes, you've already made that aspersion.
It's not an aspersion. It's a statement.
It's an opinion.
It's an opinion, not an aspersion.
Okay, so it's an opinion, but when I say, why do you think the FBI didn't do that, you don't want to comment on
it? I don't know.
Okay.
Don't know.
Don't know. Guess we'll figure that out. What is the number one thing that should come to Marion in the next few years that's really going to turn the city around?
I think my number one goal as a legislator and as an advocate for the city and the county of Marion is job creation and job retention, Scott. And sometimes we don't pay enough attention and focus on job retention. it's not just about creating a new job. Is that new job sustainable? And when I'm here every Monday, and since my appointment and my election, I spend every Monday in Marion visiting with different constituents, elected officials, and community leaders to try to understand what the issues are. One of the issues that I hear and the concerns that I hear is about job retention. That we are creating jobs that may or may not be sustainable in our community. And I think that's what my focus will be, and so that I will work to have legislation that looks at reducing a lot of the regulatory rules and issues that confine businesses right here in Marion from future growth. I'll look to what the issues are with regard to why did AgriCon move without much notice. What can we do to foresee some of the problems that some of our industries are facing before they simply announce that they're leaving Marion Community? We need to be much more involved with our industries, our businesses, our small businesses especially, because it's small business that really runs the engine, is the engine of our state and our community.
Before we wrap up, and again, I thank you for coming in and answering the questions, because some people don't and some people do, and I appreciate what you've come here to do today. But do we have a question? Is this... okay, go right. Pick up a microphone before we get off the air. And Terry Tackett, one of our hosts here at the station, wanted to ask a question of State Representative Polenda. Sean, did you have anything, by the way, before we wrap this up?
Oh, yeah. Do you think we'll ever get to vote online?
I don't know about voting online. I know that Secretary of State Husted has expressed real reservations about the potential for fraud. Applying online to register to vote is one thing.
Yeah.
Voting online is another thing altogether, and I share his concerns about the potential for fraud with online voting. I think the legislature would have to take a serious look at that before we would entertain whether or not that's feasible here in Ohio.
Terry, final question to you.
Yeah. Dorothy, answer to the question, you were talking about job retention. Are we actually exploring as far as other companies? Are we visiting with and trying to get them to come to Marion? Is that part of the retention process, or are we just focusing strictly on the businesses in Marion?
Well, no, just the opposite. My point was, I think sometimes more emphasis is placed on bringing new businesses to Marion rather than focusing on the needs and the issues of the businesses that are here. And we need to really have ears to the ground and to be visiting with our businesses that are here to understand, are they having problems continuing to stay here? What are the issues that are preventing them from growing in our community? And I think really we need to focus on that just as much as bringing new businesses and new jobs to Marion.
But I guess my question is too: are they the right type of job? You see what I'm saying? I mean, like, we have a lot of retail and restaurant, but are we focusing on the manufacturing aspect of?
Well, visiting with several of the manufacturing companies in Marion that exists now, I am concerned that we as a legislature need to look at some of the regulations that are in place in Ohio's laws that prevent them from expanding their workforce, or prevent them from even expanding their plant facilities. So it's great to look at new businesses and what is the potential for bringing a new business here, but we also need to work with our existing businesses to make sure that the employees who are here continue to have jobs within that business.
30 seconds left, Sean. Go ahead.
I just was wondering why our roads and a lot of empty buildings, I mean, I understand that because the jobs are gone, but why our roads are all so rough around here in Marion. Is there something we could fix on?
Well, roads are an interesting issue. Infrastructure is always an interesting issue because you've got a division of duties between the cities, the townships, and the state. And literally, there are roads and streets that are owned in part, or the responsibility in part, of the city, and in part the township, and in part the state.
Okay.
And I have been involved in many issues about some of our streets and some of our county roads. Townships have very limited budgets within which they can maintain their roads, and they're constantly faced with whether or not they have enough money to do chip and seal, which, of course, as you know, is a rather short-term solution as opposed to something else. The other thing with wrote with ODOT in Roads and Bridges is that there are constant concerns of our constituents about the safety of some of our roads. Next week, I'm meeting with some constituents right here in Marion who have a concern about an intersection. And I was able to get a meeting with ODOT, the constituents, and some elected officials together to look at this spot to see if we can make it safer for our residents by installing flashing lights, a slowdown signal, etc. And I so appreciate constituents contacting me saying, Dorothy, would you come out and meet me at this spot and see and witness for yourself how dangerous this intersection is. So infrastructure, the maintenance of it, and the safety of it is an issue that I have been involved in many times and continue to be involved in the district.
Well, I have to say our time has run short. We ran a little over, but I do thank State Representative Dorothy Polenda for coming in. I hope you do come back because I think, as we always say, Republican, Democrat, Independent, whatever anybody is, anybody who takes the time to run for office and come to speak to the people in the community and share what's going on, that's a great, great attribute and a great thing. Thank you, Dorothy.
Thank you, Scott.
Okay. We'll be back in about 10 minutes.
It's to win a new 50-inch television. It's Halloween Bash 2016. Get your tickets now. The spookiest